Before we begin our presentation today, we'd like to take a moment to invite you to the upcoming A Vision for You convention. It's called The Power of the Big Book, a weekend of inspiration, education, motivation, and fellowship. It happens on Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, November 7th, 8th, and 9th, 2025. This happens at Liberty International Airport, Marriott in Newark, New Jersey. If you've never been to the convention, you're in for something powerful. It's where the Big Book comes to life, where the pages we read daily are matched with real voices, real stories, and real transformation. This is your chance to meet fellows face to face, people you've heard on the line, shared with in study, or listened to in meetings, to reconnect, re-energize, and reignite your recovery journey. We'll have dynamic keynote speakers, breakout sessions, and a weekend packed with the kind of spiritual connection and recovery that's hard to describe but impossible to forget. So here's the important part. Registration is now open at www.avisionforyou.info, AVISION, the number 4, YOU.INFO. Hotel rooms are available at great rates, but space is limited, and we sold out in 2019. Make this your time, whether you're new, returning, or solid in recovery. Come join the fellowship live and in Technicolor. We'll be waiting for you and saving you a seat, just like Leah says, right up front.
Thank you so much, Jason KP. Hey, good morning, everybody, and welcome to a special edition of A Vision for You. My name is Leah M. I'll be your moderator today. Today is Sunday, July 27th, 2025. The share ID numbers for Friday, July 25th, are the following. For the 7 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,639. That's 22639. And for the 10 a.m. Eastern Big Book Study, 22,640. This morning, A Vision for You presents Emotional Sobriety, God, and the 12 Steps. For members of our 12-step fellowship, such as Overeaters Anonymous, the steps serve a specific purpose. According to Alcoholics Anonymous co-founder Bill W., their author, the 12 steps are a group of principles, spiritual in their nature, which, if practiced as a way of life, can expel the obsession to drink, for us to compulsively overeat, and enable the sufferer to become happily and usefully whole. In other words, the 12 steps can keep us as recovered compulsive overeaters, food sober and happy. The 12 steps are designed to bring about a spiritual awakening, a change in the way we think, a change in the way we feel, a change in the way we behave. Our selfish, self-centered pursuits are subdued and redirected. Our spiritual awakening instills in us a new perspective. We are taken from a self-centered existence to a God-centered way of life, which requires continuous commitment and effort. We can and must continue to let go of fear, to let go of resentment and selfishness, put aside selfish demands, practice being loving, and become more connected to God, our family, our friends, our fellows. We now look for continued emotional balance, emotional sobriety, and increased joy in living and fulfillment from things with real and lasting value. Awaken to the presence of God. Our lives are renewed, restored, rehabilitated, filled with new purpose and meaning. Joining us today to share her personal story of transformation as a result of these 12 steps is Colleen M., a recovered compulsive overeater from Maryland. Colleen is dedicated to the 12-step way of life, which includes carrying the message of recovery. And it's with great appreciation I welcome Colleen M. to the line. Good morning, Colleen.
Good morning, Leah. Can I be heard?
Yes, you can.
Okay, I'm sorry, I just muted myself again. Good morning, everyone. This is Colleen M. from Maryland, grateful, recovered, compulsive overeater. And when I heard the announcements of this topic, I was like, oh, I can't wait to hear what the speaker's going to say about this. And I still really can't wait to hear what I'm going to say about this. But what I thought, what I've been taught in the rooms of recovery, and thank you for asking me to do service, it's not something I love, but feel it's necessary because so many have gone before me and done it for me. But so what I was taught in the rooms of the 12-step rooms was to talk about what it was like, what happened, and what it's like now. So that's what I'm going to attempt to do. And although I have not needed to use food to deal with my life and emotional issues in a little over 8 years, I still have to do this program one day at a time because it is progressive. And so I have to keep working at it. So I'm going to talk a little bit about what it was like. So I grew up in an alcoholic home with active alcoholic and an active compulsive overeater. And in that home, there was a lot of dysfunction due to the alcoholic. And it was a very unsafe place. So I developed a lot of, I believe, unhealthy coping mechanisms to deal with life. And I know now that those were necessary for survival, which was, you know, they suited me very well at the time. They don't suit me today, so I have to work on that. But food became noticeable for me in my life when I was around 12. I gained about 30 pounds in 1 year, and that, you know, I was the only one in my family who was heavy, so there was a lot of shame and a lot of teasing, and that really affected me. So that started my diet career. And then I hit around 14, and, you know, back in the 70s, there was a lot of other substances available. So I partaked in that. I feel like I was a thrill seeker as a kid. I actually started smoking cigarettes out of my dad's ashtray at like 9 or 10 years old. So I was always looking for a way out of the emotional, what felt like just emotional chaos. So, you know, that started my journey into other substances, and food at the time took a back seat. So I also realized that growing up in a situation like that, I developed a shame-based way of looking at life. I, you know, now realize that I, you know, had severe, like the book talks about, I'm an egomaniac with an inferiority complex. I had a lot of self-esteem issues. I didn't think I was good enough, smart enough, pretty enough. I learned how to people please at a very young age. You know, basically, let me figure out what you think you want me to be, and I'm going to be that person. Super sensitive. And really unable to set any healthy boundaries. So so that was kind of what it was like. I did have a strong desire to be in the healthcare field, which probably saved my life. So I went to college right out of high school, got my degree, and started my working career. I got married at a very young age, around 22, had 3 kids very quickly, and surprise, surprise, we had some alcohol issues in our family. When I was in my, and I had some food issues as well. So, you know, pregnancies, I gained weight. Just started that diet exercise. craziness for many years. I did every diet known to man, exercised like a crazy person. And I knew at the time that my eating was different than other people. I had no idea that I had a disease or that, I thought it was a lack of willpower and a moral issue, and why couldn't I eat like everyone else? And I did realize early on that if I ate certain substances, that my day was going to go badly. The longer I could stay away from the substances, the better my day would go. And of course, my emotions were always about how my food was and what the scale said. So I created a lot of chaos in my family because no one knew who they were coming home to. You know, they never knew who they were going to be getting. My kids used to hide their candy from me when they would get their Easter candy or their Halloween candy. I didn't have to tell them. They knew at a very young age, like, if we don't hide our candy when we come home from school, it's going to be gone because mom's going to eat it. You know, I hid certain, you know, when I was on the fat-free diets, I would hide, you know, certain things from everyone in the house because, you know, I didn't want them to get my stuff, my stash. You know, the list goes on and on with the type of craziness. I'm very thankful that I never did, you know, I never was bulimic, although I really thought I would like to be. I thought that would be a great answer to my problem. I just couldn't stand the thought of making myself vomit. So I'm very grateful for that. So around my late 30s, I realized that my life wasn't working. My marriage wasn't working. And I wanted to talk about through all of this. As a kid, we went to church pretty regularly, and that was the only place I really felt safe. I loved going to church. I felt like I had a really strong connection with God as a young kid. I prayed at night because there was a lot of fear. So God was somebody or an entity that I, you know, leaned on quite a bit, and I felt like God got me through that childhood. And then as a teenager, I got involved with a charismatic group at church, and I'm sure my parents were like, I would come home singing, you know, praising God, and my parents were probably like, what is happening? And then, you know, I got through school, and I guess my self-sufficiency took off, and God was kind of in the backseat a little bit. But as, you know, I raised my children, we took them to church, I taught Sunday school, I felt very connected with, you know, I've always been in a religion. And in my late 30s, when, you know, my marriage wasn't going well, and my life wasn't going well, and I was having a harder time managing the food, I decided it was time to go to counseling. I had tried counseling back in my late teens, and I made it for about 15 minutes and went running out of the office. Went to counseling, and she had me fill out this form, and it talked about, you know, how much do you drink, and you know, she suggested that maybe my husband and I had an alcohol problem, which you could have blown me over with a feather. I was like, this is not possible. I'm not an alcoholic. I certainly would never marry one. So I decided to learn about alcoholism and started doing some reading and thought, you know, I thought blacking out was normal when you drank. You know, I grew up with, you know, surrounded by people who drank. I didn't know anything different. So in the late 90s, I started going to Al-Anon and AA. I quit drinking May the 10th of 1999. So I've got about 26 years of sobriety. And during that time, I was really leaning on God because I really couldn't live in the marriage that I was in. And could not imagine not being in it. So that marriage ended, and I really had a hard time accepting that. You know, I grew up as a Catholic. My grandfather was super religious, and I can't tell you how many times he said, divorce is worse than death. I would rather see you die than get divorced. And, you know, I guess that was in my head because I really had a hard time accepting, and not so much divorce, but that I didn't have the perfect family with the white picket fence and the kids aren't going to come home and, you know, they're going to come home and mom and dad are going to be there. So that ending of that relationship kind of took me back into the food. And to go backwards, when I went to Al-Anon and AA, I also went to OA for a while, trying to save my marriage. All of this was trying to save my marriage, not really because I thought I needed help. I was trying to fix this person I was married to, and because I was perfect in every way. I went to OA, and I did lose the 40 pounds that I had to lose, but totally did that because I wanted to, like I said, save my marriage. Although I felt better, I had no idea that this was a lifelong problem or that, you know, I don't know that I worked the steps then. I think I was given a diet. It was the HAL program back then. It was a very small group. One lady kind of sponsored all of us. And when we picked up, we got kicked all. She told us we couldn't come back to the meeting. So it was very, very bizarre. So I got divorced, which was terrifying. The first time I ever lived alone. And, you know, I'm 40 years old and living alone for the first time. I got three teenage daughters. Absolutely terrifying. And although I tried to maintain a relationship with God, I really lost my trust in God because it was God's job to fix this, and he did not do that. And I was not happy about it. So although I tried to maintain that relationship, I really did not trust that God was going to, even though through all of that, I see God now in so many different things that happened. But anyway, my trust in God had gone away. I continued going to AA. I did some regular OA, but I never had a sponsor. I never worked any steps. I was certainly not going to give my food over to anybody. But I went to these meetings like once a week and listened. And then I went out and ate. And sometimes I had some moderate control over my eating, but you know, as we all know, this disease is progressive, and my ability to control it became less and less. So fast forward a few years, I remarried, which I thought, you know, here's God sent me this new person, and I was a healthier person at the time. And we were married for 2 years, and my husband got diagnosed with a chronic illness that caused him to have to stop working. And that sent me down another relapse, which lasted about 10 years. And the other one of my, I have multiple addictions, people, you know, anything that will take me out of thinking or feeling, I could be addicted to, but busyness is a big one for me. So I went back to school, started a master's program, started a new career, and woke up from that fog about 10 years later and 120 pounds heavier. I kind of came to the end of myself around 2015 because I was pushing so hard, you know, physical exhaustion, emotional exhaustion, some other family dynamics that were happening. And I, realized I needed to get back to OA. Because that's the only thing that's ever really that had ever worked for me in the past, where I actually could not eat and have some sanity around not eating. So I started going to regular OA. I did that for about 2 years. I had a sponsor who basically suggested that I send her my food on a regular basis. And of course I didn't. She just listened to me complain on a regular basis and never fired me. But the best thing she did for me is she said, you should go listen to these 90-day meetings. There's a lot of recovery there. And so so I started listening to the 90-day meetings, and I heard something different there. And finally, June 21st of 2017, I got abstinent, stopped eating, got on a healthy food plan and weighed and measured food plan, and had a sponsor who worked the steps with me. And I did 90 day for a couple of years. However, there was still something missing. It was a lot of, we used the tools, which are great. I love the tools. But there was, I always felt for me that there's always a constant fear of relapse. If I don't make my three calls, if I don't, you know, do this, that, or the other, you know, I'm going to relapse. If I don't do my writings. And so I didn't feel recovered. And I got on the Vision for You line, you know, a couple years, you know, maybe 2018, and started hearing people say that they were recovered. And I thought that was sacrilegious. I'm like, oh my God, how could they say such a thing? We can never be recovered. We can never be cured, but I'm here to tell you that we can be recovered. So during that time, my relationship with God was, I wanted no parts of God. I really had a hard time with the prayer and meditation, and thank goodness had all of my sponsors recommended that I try to pray and meditate. And in the beginning, you know, I just decided God doesn't work for me. And I stopped going to church. I really just wanted no parts of it. So it was a really hard, long climb for me to get back to a relationship with a higher power. And I believe that was necessary because God didn't want me to take credit for this. I think God needed me to know that He was doing this for me. I wasn't doing this. So I started off, I Googled prayers from the Big Book, and there's a website out there that has, you know, pages of prayers that come from the Big Book. And I just started with those. And when I started listening to Vision, I found a sponsor who took me through the steps. Asked me some questions about, you know, what is it about your higher power that doesn't work for you? And, you know, step three is my favorite step, but the hardest step. And I work that every day. So she asked me some questions about, you got to make your own higher power. You got to come up with a different higher power, which I thought was another sacrilegious, like, I can't do that, you know. So what I started off with and what helped me was that, yes, I believe there is a God. Can I believe that God is all-loving, all-powerful, and cares about me? And I decided that, yes, I could believe those things. And that's where I started. My journey back to finding my higher power. And so, you know, we worked the steps. The other thing that I really had a hard time with was seeing my part. Growing up in the family that I grew up in, I learned, well, I don't know yet. So I was good at being a victim and a martyr. And I really had a hard time seeing my part in the things that took place in my life, because, you know, I was my intentions were so good. I was only here to help. And someone, my sponsor, gave me a sheet. It's 2 pages. You know, it lists, you know, how was I selfish, dishonest, self-seeking, and afraid, and it actually like listed all these different ways. And you know, I'm sure other people kind of know what I'm talking about. But that was really helpful to me. It really helped break it down for me so that I could see, oh, maybe I wasn't being helpful. Maybe I was being manipulative. You know, maybe that wasn't, you know, me sticking my nose in other people's business wasn't helpful. Because I always was focused on how I could fix you, because I never wanted to look at how I needed to look. I never wanted to look within at how I needed to be fixed. So my relationship, you know, going to Vision for You, learning love and tolerance for myself and for my fellows, working the steps with a recovered person, and developing this relationship with my higher power has really, really transformed my life and how I show up today as a recovered person. I have, you know, a list of an integrity list, you know, how I want to show up as a wife, how I want to show up as a mother, how I want to show up as a friend, and how I want to show up with my relationship with God. So what is it like today? Today, I wish I could tell you that I was completely fixed and healed, but I still work. I have to work on this stuff every day. I wake up an addict every day, and I wanted to, you know, read the 12 promises of AA. It's in the big book, page 83 and 84. We are going to know a new freedom and a new happiness. We are going to not regret the past, and we'll just shut the door on it. We will comprehend the word serenity. We will know peace. No matter how far down the scale we have gone, we will see how our experiences can benefit others. That feeling of uselessness and self-pity will disappear. We will lose interest in selfish things and gain interest in our fellows. Self-seeking will slip away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. Fear of people and economic insecurity will leave us. We intuitively know how to handle situations which used to baffle us. We will suddenly realize that God is doing for us what we could not do for ourselves. These are promises that I really never thought I would have. And most days I have them all. Some days I do have fear. I do have fear of people and economic insecurity at times. 2 years ago, my husband has been asking me to retire for a couple years now. And 2 years ago, I was paralyzed with fear about this, you know, financial fear, and had to do a lot of work around that. You know, talked to a lot of people, reached out for help outside the rooms. We got a financial advisor. I started making plans. I plan to retire at the end of this year, which I'm very excited about. We have all kinds of plans to do some traveling while he's still able. And that's all this program and God. You know, I still struggle and recently have been struggling with some fear of people. I have two relationships in my life that have been painful. You know, one I lost altogether and one that is just not where I want it to be. And that I started working another program to help me, you know, keep the focus on me. I really, I have no control of the circumstances in my life. And if I'm trusting, relying on my higher power, which I work on doing on a daily basis, then I trust that these relationships will be healed. And it may not be, it certainly won't be in my time. And it may not be on this side of, you know, the realm. But I truly believe that when there is a desire for healing, then God would take care of the rest. And I do have a desire for healing. And I wanted to go back and tell you some, my ex and I couldn't really be around him for several years due to some unhealthy behaviors that took place in that relationship. But today, he's remarried, I'm remarried. We spend a lot of time together as a family. My husband and I have six kids. We have 11 grandkids. We get together with my ex and his wife and my children regularly. And it's just a beautiful thing. And I'm so grateful, even though I don't have that white picket fence, my kids are, you know, grown adults who, you know, seem to have a manageable life. You know, they're raising beautiful children, and they don't have to worry about whether their parents are in the same room together and if there's going to be animosity. we celebrate, my ex-husband and I, our birthdays are 3 days apart, and my kids were like, and our birthdays are in December, so they're like, yeah, it's really busy this time of year. Do you think we could celebrate your birthdays together? We really can't, we just don't have the time to celebrate each individually. So for the last several years, we all get together. It's one of our favorite things to do. We all get together and go out to dinner to celebrate our birthdays. My grown adult children, their spouses, and my husband, and my ex-husband, his wife. It's just, when I close the door on what God's able to do, and I have to, and I keep my focus so narrow, I really limit, and I like to say God likes to show off. God does like to show off, at least in my life. And, my parents who, really struggled with their own personal issues. We actually went to counseling together when I was, in my late 30s, early 40s. And there was so much healing that took place in those relationships. And I was able to be with both of my parents when they aged and as they left this world. And I was able to care for them and be the daughter that I thought God was asking me to be to them. And none of this would have been possible without the recovery work that I've done, the personal work that I've done with counselors, and the basis that I had in my religion of my childhood and what I feel that taught me, and I'm so grateful for that, was that, we must forgive. I must forgive, and I must work towards healing in my relationships. And that's one of the things I loved when I came to Vision, when I heard love and compassion and tolerance is our code. I had not heard that before, and that's so important to me, to do no harm. When I work with my sponsees, when I work with other people, I find that we share some very intimate things about ourselves in this work, and especially in the OA program, but maybe in all of them. I share, some things with my sponsees, and they share with me, and it leaves us very vulnerable, and it's tough to be vulnerable with people, because, I like to see us all as hurt little children bumping into other hurt little children, and we make mistakes, and we do wound each other. So my goal in recovery today, as I work with other people, is to do no harm. I do have to weigh and measure my time, because I have a tendency to get a hit from, from being needed. And because of the years that my disease stole from my family, and especially my husband, part of my recovery work is to be present for them. So I do weigh and measure my time as far as what I give to my recovery work, what I give to my family, what I give to my job. This work has allowed me to show up in every aspect of my life, I feel, as a whole person. My husband lost his sister on Monday, so we have spent the week here with his niece trying to help her prepare for a funeral that we're having tomorrow. And I've been able to show up for this young lady who has no other family. She's single. This was my sister-in-law's only child, and she doesn't have a husband or kids. It's been extremely difficult for her and my husband. And to that, I can put my needs and designs aside and ask, and it's been uncomfortable. There's been times where it's been uncomfortable with all the emotions and the family dynamics. And, I just step aside and say, God, what would you have me be? I've had to do one 10 step this week, which is pretty good. But I can be a woman of integrity today. I can show up and participate in life and help others when there's a need. But I also have to make sure that I am spiritually fit. And that's, you know, what keeps us from relapse. So talking about, you know, it's been 8 years since I had to use food to hurt myself. I've maintained a 120-pound weight loss. I weigh and measure my food on a daily basis because that is the boundary I need around my food. I commit that food to a sponsor. And I tell my sponsees all the time, if I miss my prayer and quiet time today, I'm going to feel it. And if I miss it tomorrow, you're going to feel it. So I do my prayer meditation time, and I'm happy to report that I could get through more than 5 minutes. I would love to spend an hour, but usually 30 minutes to 45 minutes in prayer and meditation, reading some devotionals and some other things that I do. And I work with my sponsees. I do outreach calls, and I try to let God lead the direction of where my recovery is supposed to be. And right now, I believe, yes, this work that I'm doing with these relationships in my life is, you know, just another way of God saying, you know, we're going to go a little deeper. We're going to peel that onion. And anytime I have strong emotional responses to things that are happening in my life today, I believe they're historically related to the lies that I developed and taught myself from my childhood. You know, I developed a lot of ideas from being a little kid growing up in that environment that I have to challenge today. And I have to go to God for all of the needs that I have. My little love bucket that I used to look for other people to fill, or my job to fill, or, you know, spending, you know, overspending, or a multitude of things, drugs, alcohol, food, you name it. You know, today I have to go to God with my uncomfortable feelings. And what's nice is I can sit with these feelings today. I can be uncomfortable. I can be in uncomfortable situations. I can do hard things. And I don't have to abuse myself with drugs, alcohol, food, other people's opinions. As long as I go to God and He does, you know, I get those intuitive thoughts, those, what does the big book talk about? We intuitively start to know how to handle situations that used to baffle us. You know, going back to this promises, you know, self-seeking slips away. Our whole attitude and outlook on life will change. I can slip back into these things very easily if I stop doing this work. I will always be, you know, a compulsive overeater and a ease and comfort seeking missile. But today I feel called by my higher power to show up differently. And the other thing I wanted to mention, I'm surrounded by, you know, most of my family, none of my family is in recovery, which says a lot about my recovery work. They apparently don't see anything in me that they want. So I am around a lot of people that still partake in all of the things that I don't partake in. And sometimes it's awkward and tough to be around because I feel like sometimes an outsider in my family. Although they know what I do and they're very comfortable with it, sometimes it's not comfortable for me to be around the heavy-duty party scene sometimes that takes place. So, you know, I can set healthy boundaries for that as well and realize that those two, I think, are old triggers for me. And if I'm not spiritually fit, I don't go to those things. But I often can because I am spiritually fit. Other thing I wanted to mention is, you know, sometimes it's hard for me to get in touch with my feelings. It may take me a few days if I feel disturbed to really figure out why I'm disturbed. And learning to accept my emotions and feelings and not judging myself for them has been a real blessing as well. I am learning to have more grace and tolerance and love for myself. And that is transformed into being able to love, tolerate, and have grace for other people. And so that is important for me too, to remember that I am a child of God. I'm a wounded little kid walking around and just doing the best I can. I'm not going to be perfect. I think when I came back, I was so mad at myself because I hadn't figured this thing out yet. You know, I've been all these years in recovery and you're still, you know, a mess. And today I know that, you know, I'm not going to figure these things out. I'm never going to arrive. I'm never going to get this thing 100%. I'm going to be human, and that's okay too. So I think on that, I'm going to quit. I think I've said all I can say, and I'll pass. Thank you, everyone, for letting me share and for being part of this meeting that saved my life. And I'm planning on sticking around.
Thank you so much, Colleen, for your beautiful and inspiring presentation this morning. Thank you. It was so authentic and rich and profound, the transformation that you shared. Another gem for the archives. Today's presentation, share ID 22641. That's 22641 for Colleen's presentation this morning. Colleen's contact information will be given at the conclusion of this recording, so do stay tuned for that. And we will now transition to a question and answer segment. You can pose a question to Colleen by pressing star 1 to unmute. I need your name, including the first letter of your last name.
Holly D.
Holly D.
Robin D.
Carol
L. Amanita R.
Hillary B.
Denise D.
Is that Denise?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Okay.
Jeannie N.
Jeannie
Jessica
N.
C.
Jessica.
Did you get Hanayeta?
I did. Thus far, I have Polly D, Cheryl L, Hanayeta R, Hillary B, Denise B, Jeannie N, Jessica C. Who did I miss? Okay. Perhaps I got everybody. All right, let's see. I'm sorry?
Sherry A.
Okay. All right, let's get started. Questions only. One question per customer, please. Polly D, you're up with your question.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much, Colleen. I got a lot out of your presentation and related to it, especially the alcoholism that I grew up in. My question is, you mentioned that you sometimes, it takes you a few days to know what you're feeling, and I related to that so much. So what my question is, how then does the 10th step and the nightly review figure in when it takes you a while to figure out what's going on with you? And I could say something about myself, but sometimes the instantaneous whatever, it takes me a while. So thanks for answering that question.
Thanks, Polly. Appreciate the question. So, yeah, I mean, you know, I do my nightly reviews, and sometimes things will pop up, but, you know, sometimes, you know, not. Sometimes in the morning, if I'm doing my quiet time, it'll pop in that, oh, yeah, that disturbance I had yesterday, you know, my office manager said something that annoyed me, you know, or I mean, it could be just a little thing, but it's like, oh, yeah, that's me, you know, trying to, I wasn't getting what I wanted. You know, I wasn't getting the help I needed, or, you know, did I ask for the help? No. One example, I had a little bit of a fairly significant emotional relapse a couple weeks ago. I had lost this relationship with someone about a year ago, and I, you know, was trying to be the big, you know, recovered person. Oh, it's not a big deal. You know, people come in and out of our lives. And it hit me a couple of weeks ago just how hurtful and how I needed to grieve that relationship, you know, because it was something that I valued and I no longer have. And it hurt. And, you know, I think I tend to think I'm not supposed to, you know, just accept everything as it comes and not feel. And, you know, we're allowed to grieve. We're allowed to feel hurt. And that kind of propulsed me into, you know, this new work I'm doing with relationships and people in my life. The other relationship that I struggle with is with one of my adult children. And, you know, accepting that this relationship isn't where I want it to be, and there's nothing I can do about it, but it still hurts, you know, so I can accept that I have these feelings and not judge myself because of it. I hope I'm answering your question. But so those things kind of, a lot of times they come up in my quiet time. Sometimes in the middle of the night, I have difficulty sleeping sometimes. So I'll spend some time with God during the night and he'll reveal things to me then. But, you know, sometimes I sometimes just feel annoyed and I'm not quite sure. But if I continue to pray and look at it, I usually can get it. And sometimes it might take a couple of days, sometimes a couple of months. Like I said, this relationship that I had lost, I really didn't think what affected me the way that it did. And now that I know that, I can do something about it and I can work on it, which is what we're here for. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Polly D. Cheryl L., your turn.
Hi, good morning. This is Cheryl L. from Florida calling. Thank you, Colleen, for your share this morning. I was really interested to hear more about emotional sobriety. My question was around difficult relationships, but seeing as you've already answered that, I'll go into a different one. Can you tell us a little bit about how the 9-step promises have come true for you? Can you just give an example or two, if to something specific? Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks for the question. So many of them. So we will not regret the past or wish to shut the door on it. You know, when I first was getting recovered and doing this work, I had a lot of regret about the past, especially, you know, how I was with my children. You know, they will tell you that I was a good mom. But I see now how, you know, the relationship issues I was having with their father, you know, my eating disorder, you know, my compulsive overeating, you know, that all shaped some things that, you know, how they were raised. And today, and I see my oldest daughter, it's like looking in a mirror at myself. And I'm like, oh my goodness. But she's, you know, she's on her own journey. And she needs to figure that out for herself. And maybe she will and maybe she won't. But I don't, you know, through this work and through, like I said, getting some more grace and mercy for myself, I don't regret the past. I understand that I did the best that I could. Would I have liked it to have been a little different? Sure. But I can't continue to beat myself up about it. That's not what my higher power would want. And I can't get anywhere if I remain the victim. If I remain, if I stay in the victim mode, you know, I can't recover. And I spent way too much of my life there. You know, I will know peace. I mean, I have peace most days. You know, I spend time with my higher power and I take my higher power with me throughout the day, trying to connect all through the day. And you know, I don't have the negative thoughts running through my mind all day long, the judgmental, you know, because my deep to go back to that judging, you know, I've got this harsh critic in my head, this, you know, parent that's telling me constantly that I'm not enough, I'm not doing it enough, I'm not working hard enough, that wasn't good enough. And those are just lies that somewhere I developed in my life, and I need to challenge those lies. you know, I'm doing the best I can one day at a time. So, you know, working with these, you know, changing these attitudes and these thought processes has helped change me. And like I said, I get all of these promises. But, you know, there are times where that old critic or those old thought processes come back in and I have to wrestle with them. I don't live there like I used to. You know, I usually, you know, don't spend weeks and months there. Maybe a couple days, maybe a couple hours, but I can turn it around pretty quickly. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Cheryl L. Hanayeta R., your turn to pose a question.
Good morning, everyone. Thank you, Leia, as always. You're wonderful. And Colleen, thank you so much. Such an honest, heartfelt delivery. I appreciate you. I have a question that I'll ask you, I'll call you, but the one I want to ask now is, how do you work step three on a daily basis?
Well, my plans and designs didn't work, and so I do know that. One, I do 1, 2, and 3 every day. You know, I wake up an addict. I understand who I am. I have conceded to my innermost self that this is who I am, and this is the medicine that I need to take. And then, you know, step two, I do believe in a higher power, and then I work to turn my will and life over to that higher power on a daily basis. And it starts with my quiet time in the morning. I said I have a couple devotionals that I read. I have a couple inspirational things that I read. I listen to some meditation. And then I try to take God with me. And, you know, when I often, you know, when I get disturbed throughout the day, I'm like, oh, yeah, that's me trying to play God again. You know, usually it's because somebody's not following my script. I don't know. Somebody's unmuted. I'm not sure who's in the kitchen doing dishes or something. You know, typically when I get disturbed, it's because, someone's not following my script, you know, and I'm not in charge today. I'm not the higher power. And what a great relief that it's like a weight lifted off my shoulders that I don't have to be in charge of the world. Today, if I'm not getting my needs met, you know, maybe I need to set a boundary. Maybe I need to ask. You know, maybe I need to step away. But I try to stay humble before my God. I used to hear in the rooms all the time, like, oh, I get on my knees when I wake up every morning. And I was like, I'm not doing that. I'm not getting on my knees. And over the last several months, I get on my knees when I wake up in the morning. I have to be humble before my higher power. I spent too much of my life thinking that I was equal to God or wanting to be equal to God and needing to understand God. And today, I definitely don't understand God, and I definitely don't understand, you know, what's right for me. I certainly don't know what's right for you. And funny, I heard nothing I say is usually original. I've heard this in meetings, but someone was saying, you know, I knew a lot more 20 years ago than I do now. And probably 5 years from now, I'm going to know even less. So as I recover, I find out more and more about what I don't know. And I'm really very comfortable with the fact that I don't know. I don't know what's best for anyone. What I do is try to put my hands in the hands of my higher power. And I try to do that for my sponsees as well. I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Hanayeta. Or Hillary B., your turn.
Thank you so much, Leia, and thank you for sharing. I have a question. I am really challenged with measuring and weighing my time. I know it might not be your ability to share much as an answer, but I would love to hear how you do it.
Okay, thank you. Thanks for the question. Yeah, yeah, it's when I got abstinent, I had a lot of other, you know, my life was really out of control. So I had to work on my spending. So I had to do a budget, you know, a couple years after I got abstinent. I felt God was leading me to become more financially responsible. So I had to put together a budget. And I started living on that budget and, you know, really being just responsible for the financial resources that I had. And then the same with time, I have a real problem with filling my plate full of all kinds of really wonderful things that I want to do. And then, you know, my husband would always say, you like, you go and go and go, and then you like crash and burn. And that was how I lived my whole life. And I had a lot of expectations of other people because I had all these commitments that I had made that I couldn't keep because I was so much that I was mad at everyone around me because they wouldn't help me, you know, fulfill all my commitments. So today I don't commit to anything that I can't do personally. I still work, so I have time set aside where I work. I get up at a certain time in the morning. I have my quiet time set aside. It's almost just like doing a budget, okay? So from such and such a time to such and such a time, I do my quiet time and I speak with my sponsees. And then I do my meetings, which are sketched out. Then I go to work. And then in the evening, I have time with my husband. On the weekends, I have time with my children. I have siblings that I have a very large family. My mother was the oldest of 9. My father was the second oldest of 10. My first husband was one of 13. When I tell you I got family coming out the yin yang, there's never enough time to do and be with everyone that I want to do and be with. And then I have time that I need for myself. You know, the older I get, the more I feel I need, you know, quiet, rebooting time. I have to figure out what works for me in my life. And you know, those things change. Summer is really that I realized it halfway through. It's like we have our grandkids a lot in the summer. And my time is much more limited because I want to show up. One, I want to have a relationship with the grandchildren. I want to help my children. Those are all things I think are important for me to do as a mother, grandmother. And I feel that that's what God would have me do. So some things have to give. I know today I cannot run myself into the ground because I have nothing to offer anyone if I'm showing up. And I also have to ask myself, what is my motive? You know, why am I doing this? Am I doing this because I need approval and praise from the other people around me? You know, so I can be, you know, a guru, recovery guru, you know, or am I doing this because this is my life's work, and this is what I believe my higher power is asking me to do. But I certainly can't do it if I have the wrong motives, I'm going to get resentful, and I'm going to be, I'm not going to have a message that anyone's going to want to hear. So I really have had to do a lot of work around that. My husband gets very jealous of some of the time that I spend in my recovery. And rightly so, because I have spent the last several years, you know, not having any time for him. So right now, as he's aging, part of my recovery work is to be a better partner to him. So everybody's situation is different. You know, some people, maybe when I'm retired, I feel like I'll have more time to do more. But I do try to look to my higher power for guidance on that as well. So, and if we could talk offline too, if I haven't answered that specifically, but that's what I do.
Thank you, Hillary, for your question. Denise B., your turn.
Yes, good morning, Colleen. Thank you so much for sharing all your miracles. It certainly gives me encouragement. I have a big problem with codependency as well, and I have to do something on Tuesday that's very uncomfortable, and I am terrified, and I don't want to do it. Could you just kind of walk me through what you would do if you had to do something like that and you're fearful?
Yeah. Thanks for the question. Yeah, I have had to do, so I guess I could say with the financial stuff, I could go back to that. That was horrifically terrifying too. Just so when we started looking, I started looking at what it would look like to retire. And my husband and I talked to three different financial advisors, and we finally picked one, and we had to like give him all of our money. We didn't have to, we chose to put all of our money in his hands for him to manage for us. And I got to tell you, that was terrifying for me. I didn't know how to manage it, but I was terrified to let someone else do it. And it's been, I guess, almost 2 years now. And, the money's safe, it's growing. He talks to us every couple months and encourages me, you can do it, you know, it's going to be okay. We have to live our life looking through the front window, but we can only see the blessings when we look through the back. Through things, I have to walk through the fear, knowing that I'm going to have fear. You know, like doing this, texted me and asked me to do this because she'd asked me a couple years ago, and I was in the middle of working through the steps with my last sponsor, and I didn't feel recovered, and I had to say no. And I had been praying when I was going through all of this issue with these relationships. And I thought, if I get asked again, I'm going to have to say yes, because this is just part of what we do by sharing the message. And she texted me, and I'm like, dang, got it. I'm going to have to say yes to this. Not really what I'm comfortable. I'd much rather sit down with a one-on-one than, you know, speak publicly. But, I think about all the people that have done it for me and all the different podcasts I've listened to when I was trying to get abstinent, and how helpful those stories were that I could relate to and go, oh, yeah, that's me. Oh, yeah, I feel that way too. Oh, yeah, I had that experience. So, you know, why would I, you know, not say yes to something? I read something once where something about, God can't give us what we want. God can't give us the life that he wants for us if we're not willing to let go of the life that we have. And, now I guess my trust in God has been built up because of all of the things I can look back and see that I made it through this really hard situation. Like, you know, my childhood was very abusive, but it's almost like it happened to someone else. I can talk about it today. I can look at it. I can see the good and the bad. I don't live in that shame, and I don't wear that victim across my years. I did walk around with victim written across my chest and, you know, blaming my parents for everything that I hadn't accomplished in life. And, it was part of my history. It's part of my story, but it doesn't define me today. So, you know, I can walk through tough things, and the more I do that and face my fears, the less fear I have the next time I have to work through something tough, because I trust now that God's going to walk through it. Like today, I really thought I would be like full of anxiety and fear, and not that I, you know, I just was like, okay, well, it's going to be what it is. You know, I'm going to tell my story. How can I mess up my story? So for me, the more I do it, the more I walk through tough periods of time, the more I walk through difficult situations and get to the other side, the more I trust it the next time around, and I can do it. I'll be able to do hard things. And, you know, I use the fellows. I pick up the phone. I talk to other people. It's amazing we all have similar situations and experiences, and it's really helpful. To be, or sometimes I only feel normal when I'm in a meeting or, you know, talking with another person in recovery, because, you know, the rest of the world just doesn't you know, open up and talk about stuff that we talk about. But yeah, so get as much support as you can, and you know, and just show up, and it'll get easier. That's my experience. So thanks for the question.
Thank you, Denise B, for your question. Jeannie N, your turn.
Jeannie Hello, N. Everyone. This is Jeannie N. I'm a compulsive overeater. I came in late, but I will be listening to this again later. I want to thank everybody for their questions. And my question was already answered, so I'm going to pass. And thank you, Colleen. Bye-bye now. Thank you. I'll pass.
Thank you.
Thank you, Jeannie. Jessica C., your question.
Hi. Thanks, Leah. Hey, thank you so much, Colleen. It was so good to hear you, and I will definitely be listening again also. You mentioned having family that's still on the party scene, as you described it. I can really relate to that. You know, having people, a lot of people around me still on the party scene or on the eating scene. And yeah, I can often feel like I'm sort of this alien who lives such a different life. And I was wondering if you could talk more about how you navigate those situations. Thank you.
Thank you. I appreciate that. So the alcohol, it can be challenging. We spend a lot of time with my ex-husband and his wife and my children, and they all drink alcohol, and it's usually around food and alcohol. And you know, I haven't done that in a long time, and even though they're accepting of it, you know, going out to dinner sometimes, I think my one daughter feels very awkward about, you know, some of the things that I do and don't do. And I guess, you know, how I manage it, I try to stay in my own lane, try to stay in my own hula hoop, and that's, you know, the other recovery program that I'm working on right now is to help, to go back and remind me that, you know, I had to experience life for myself. I had to learn my lessons through experience. I couldn't learn them from other people, and I have to give the grace for my family to do the same. If I am feeling, you know, emotionally vulnerable, if I don't feel connected to my higher power, if I'm just, you know, there are times where I just choose not to be part of the whole process. But for the most part, and if I have to be, if I can't avoid going, and I'm not feeling very strong, I'll spend a lot of time in prayer, and I'll also do before a call and an after call with a fellow. If I have to be in a situation where I'm feeling kind of unstable, I always take my own food when I go to these functions. I either eat before I go, eat when I get home, or take my own food. So I always make sure that my food is prepared, and you know, I'll be doing that over the next couple of days as we walk through this. We have a lot of family around the next couple of days, and a lot of, you know, food around, and that for the most part doesn't bother me. Although I have noticed that when my emotions are, when I'm under more stress, I feel I have more hunger. And at one point we were traveling this last year, we were away for a month, and I was having a lot of hunger, and I thought, I got to get home and talk to my nutritionist about, you know, changing my food plan. And yeah, I got home and everything was fine. So I realized, oh, probably just, you know, the stress of traveling and always thinking about what, you know, where am I going to be, what I'm going to have to eat, you know, making sure I had all my food, just more of a focus on it. So those things come up. But, you know, it's a day-by-day thing with our families or with my family. You know, like I said, my oldest daughter and I, right now, our relationship isn't where I want it to be, and it can be very painful. But like I said, what I do know is that where there is love, God will heal. And it might not be the side of heaven that it happens, but I know that the healing will happen. And that just gives me comfort, you know, and I choose to believe it because it gives me comfort. And I'm going to work my my other 12-step program, and I'm working to do the steps through that program, and just remembering that, you know, I can only change me. You know, bless them, change me. So that's why I try to keep the focus. And, you know, we can set healthy boundaries for ourselves. And as long as I'm in tune with where I'm at emotionally and whether I can be around it and when I can't be around it, then I usually do pretty well. So hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Jessica C. Sherry A., your turn.
Can I be heard?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Wonderful. Good morning, everyone. Thank you so much for your share and the service of everyone. My question surrounds being recovered. So you said in your sharing that when you first came into the rooms and you heard the word recovered, you were like, that's sacrilegious. Like, does that even exist? But now you're like, you literally said, I'm here to tell you that it, you know, you can be recovered, not cured, but recovered. So what is recovery, like, what does being recovered mean to you? If you had to break it down to somebody who is new to the program, didn't understand what that meant, what would you say to them? Thank you.
Thanks for your question. So for me, I am happily abstinent. You know, I'm a good dieter. I have spent my life dieting. But I've never dieted where I wasn't always thinking about when I could eat the foods that I really wanted to eat. You know, when I get to this weight, you know, well, it's been 6 months, certainly I can eat that now. You know, I always had that diet mentality. And I can tell you that the multiple times that I went off the diet and gained all the weight back plus some, but I didn't understand that there were alcoholic foods that when I ingested them, you know, I would have a, you know, set off this craving that I could not then no longer control. I did not understand that. So my food is down and I'm happily abstinent. I'm not looking at, oh, I wish I could eat that. Oh, look how good that looks. You know, I'm not, you know, salivating over anyone else's plate. I love the food that I eat. I feel very blessed that I have a healthy food plan. It's weighed and measured. I don't have those marbles rolling around in my head. You know, are you really abstinent? Did you really? I put my food on the scale every day. And yeah, I have peace and serenity around it. So I'm trying to remember the definition for recovered in OA, you know, that we are on a healthy food plan and that we're working towards or maintaining a healthy body weight. I guess that's abstinence. But recovery for me is, you know, food doesn't talk to me every day. I'm not in a battle with the food. I'm not in fear of relapsing. Like I said, when I was doing the 90-day program where, you know, I felt like it was more focused on the tools, you know, I always had this like fear of, oh my God, if I don't do this tool today, I'm going to pick up, you know, or if you pick up and I talk to you, then I'm going to pick up, you know, like I'm going to catch this from somebody. You know, I am so confident in one that I am a compulsive overeater and that I cannot eat certain foods or substances without setting off the craving, that I need to weigh and measure my food. And it doesn't matter if you do that or not. I know that that's what I need to do for me. I have convinced, you know, through multiple failures, this is what I need to do for my program. And I've been able to give freedom to other people to, okay, you don't need to do that. That's cool. Good for you. If you can stay, you know, peaceful, serene, recovered, and not have to do that, then, you know, God bless you. But I don't have to compare and contrast what I'm doing with what you're doing. This is what I need to do. So there's my food is in place. I've maintained, in the last 8 years, I have been at the same body weight, which is just incredible. I don't even know when I've ever had that happen in my life, that I wasn't miserably dieting or exercising. And I'm happy, joyous, and free. And, you know, for the most part. And so to me, that is recovered. You know, I can walk a free man, is what the big book talks about. I can go in places, you know, I went to a party yesterday. I did not partake in any food. I was able to enjoy watching other people enjoy, you know, have their food. But I ate before I went, and I ate when I got home. And, you know, I can show up to functions, and it's not about the food. It's about the people. It's about why I'm here. So hopefully that answers your question.
Thank you, Sherry A. We have time for maybe three more questions, two or three.
Kiana from Ohio.
Is that
N-A?
N-A. Is that Dion
from Ohio?
Kiana. Okay, gotcha. Kiana.
Lilan P. from Berlin.
Lilan P.
Melinda H.
Melinda H. Let's stop there. Okay. Kiana, go ahead with your question, please.
Thank you for your service. My question is related to emotional sobriety. You mentioned in your story that after, you know, you got remarried, you got married to someone else, and then a couple years later, you know, something changed in that relationship. And so I'm curious if you had to learn how to accept that, or if you kind of felt like, oh my gosh, I've been waiting for the other shoe to drop. And just, I was just curious if you were in recovery at that time and how you processed that change after just a couple years in a new marriage. So thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Yeah, I didn't process it very well. So when my husband got diagnosed, so my plan and design for my second marriage was that my husband traveled a lot, and, you know, he would leave on Monday morning and get home on Thursday night, which was the perfect thing for me because, you know, I had the week to do what I wanted, and I was in school at the time, and we did a lot of traveling. We went to a lot of nice places, you know, frequent flyer miles. It was, you know, so my plan was to work part-time and to do all this traveling with him. And then he was diagnosed with an illness that caused him to have to quit work. And I went into a major relapse at that time. I thought I was handling it very well. He's, you know, he kept asking, are you okay? Do you need, oh, I'm fine. This is what we're going to do. And I just went into, you know, driven mode. And I, you know, decided to change my career because now I was going to be the breadwinner, and went back to school, started a career, and I didn't even do any research on what this job would even look like. I just decided this is what I was going to do, went back to school, got my degree, and started working in this job that was like 10 times more stressful than I had before. And it was like a 10-year long, you know, me plunging into how can I get busy enough not to have to deal with this? And now I forgot what your original question was. Something about, you know, how did I come to grips with that? You know, I wind up gaining, you know, I got up to, you know, 120 pounds overweight, still going to, you know, AA meetings, trying to use AA for my food addiction. And that didn't work. You know, when I came back into OA, in 2015, you know, I was kind of at rock bottom. I still didn't realize that my husband's illness and this diagnosis was part of the problem. It was several years after getting abstinent before I could see the train I was on and, you know, be able to kind of slow that train down a little bit. It was just a coping mechanism that I had because I wasn't coping with the diagnosis and the fear of, you know, what our life was going to look like. And the beautiful part of it, another, you know, God shot, was that his disease has not progressed in the last 12 years. He's pretty much the same or maybe even a little better than he was when he got diagnosed. So, you know, here we are 12 years later. My life took a different trajectory, which, you know, I can see now was probably a good thing. I had a really good second career. But, you know, that was my self-sufficiency took over. And I didn't ask God, what should I do? I just, you know, got mad at God and took matters into my own hands. And, you know, I did the best I could. But had I been in a recovered state, you know, maybe it would have looked differently. I don't know. You know, it's water under the bridge at this point in time. But I think today I would have handled it a little differently. I hope that I would have handled it a little differently. So I hope that answers your question.
Thank you, Kiana. And our final question for today comes from Ann A.
Thank you very much, Leah, and thank you so much, Colleen. I really feel the peace, and so here's my question, and I'm sorry for your family's loss. I'm struggling now with, you know, should I retire or not, and the fear, and you gave me so many wonderful insights. When did you find the peace around it?
I guess, you know, in the last year or so, I've really not had that intense fear around it. And actually the fear is, I'm also really actually looking forward to it, counting down the days. I think it's like 4.5 months now, I think I have left. The peace, yeah, I talked to a lot of people and in recovery that have retired. I did a little work on it. As far as, you know, this is a hard transition in life to make. You know, it's like all of the transitions in my life feel like they've been hard, but why wouldn't they be? This is, you know, I've spent my life, you know, you grow up and what do you want to be when you grow up? You know, and then you spend half your childhood talking about what you want to be when you grow up, then you work towards being that person. So it's a huge thing, you know, and I don't think people talk about it until they're like ready to do it. And so I talked to other people who are looking at retiring and who have just recently retired, and they've been a really big help and inspiration. Or, oh, you're going to love it, you know. I think I'm going to be one of these people that say, I don't know where I found time to work, you know. I'm not somebody that sits around well. And I do with my type of career could possibly do a little, you know, part-time work. What I did do is I went part-time last year. So I've been at part-time for about a year. So that has helped that ease that transition and the financial fear, because I'm kind of starting to get used to what it would look like living. And it's funny because, you know, a couple of years ago, I thought I have to make this much money a year and I have to have, you know, this much set aside for this. And God has removed all of that, you know, the material things that I thought I had to have to be happy. I really, you know, what I want today is experiences with the people in my life, with other humans. You know, those material things that I thought I couldn't live without are really unimportant to me anymore. You know, I have everything I need. You know, when I look at those old ideas, like, oh my God, I'm going to be homeless. I'm going to, you know, I've never been homeless. I've never not had a roof over my head. I have, you know, money in the bank. My bills are paid. You know, so, you know, all of these fears are really unrealistic fears that that I had to challenge. So another just walking through the fear and doing the next right thing has been really helpful in and you know, I may have some fear around it again. You know, I don't know, but I feel like I've done all the footwork. You know, I know where the money's coming from. I know how the bills are going to get paid. I mean, just the idea of starting to spend your savings is like, what? You know, what do you mean I'm going to spend this money? So it's just a whole another way of looking at things. But people do it all the time. People retire every day, and they figure it out. And I'm sure I'm going to be one of those people as well.
Thank
Hope
you.
That answers your question.
Thank you, N.A. Thank you, N.A. Thanks to all who posed questions this morning. And, of course, thank you, Colleen, for spending the time with us this morning. Thanks for sharing your experience, strength, and hope, and delivering a message of hope and possibility. Really appreciate it. Share ID for today, 22,641. That's 22641. We're going to close now from page 164, found in a chapter entitled A Vision for You. Our book is meant to be suggestive only. We realize we know only a little. God will constantly disclose more to you and to us. Ask Him in your morning meditation what you can do each day for the man who is still sick. The answers will come if your own house is in order. But obviously, you cannot transmit something you haven't got. See to it that your relationship with Him is right, and great events will come to pass for you and countless others. This is a great fact for us. Abandon yourself to God as you understand God. Admit your faults to Him and to your fellows. Clear away the wreckage of your past. Give freely of what you find and join us. We shall be with you in the fellowship of the Spirit, and you will surely meet some of us as you trudge the road of happy destiny. May God bless you and keep you.